If 2020 was one of the darkest moments for childcare in New York, then 2021 has the potential to be the dawn of a new era, as the state has more than $2 billion in childcare funds to spend and has a roadmap to overhaul the system. For an update on where things stand with the transformation of the state's childcare rules and regulations, as well as the distribution of federal funding, we're joined once again by Assembly Children and Families Committee Chair Andrew Hevesy, a Queens Democrat. Welcome back to the show, Assemblymember.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on again.
So I want to start with the federal funding that New York has received. And considering the state still hasn't distributed all of the $163 million in CARES Act money from last year, advocates and providers are very concerned about the pace of distribution of more than $2 billion for child care the state has received from the December stimulus and the American Rescue Plan in March. Based on what you know now, what's the status of this new money?
So let me start with the fact that we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity here. As you mentioned, there's billions of dollars in federal funds. The problem is they have had zero impact on the ground for our providers and our families so far. So we are not happy about the pace at which the money is getting out the door. However, Senator Brisbois, who is my counterpart, the chair of the Children and Families Committee of the Senate, and I recently talked to OCFS, and I believe they'll be coming out with plans in the next couple of weeks to let the public know that this money is going to start flowing within the next 6 to 8 weeks. And I encourage OCFS to do that and get the money out the door as fast as possible.
And when it comes to the metaphorical flowing, are you talking about actually like reaching the hands of providers and parents, or would that just be the phrase where we're like allocating it and figuring out how much is going to go out? Because that was the thing with the CARES Act. We figured out how it was going to be spent pretty early on, well, actually a couple months, but then, you know, didn't hit people's pocketbooks until months and months and months later.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. The answer is we got to get these in the hands of providers. And that's what I'm talking about. So I'm hoping, based off of conversations with OCFS, and Commissioner Poole is outstanding and her team at OCFS are outstanding, and they really are trying as hard as they can to get this money out the door as fast as they can. I believe money will be in the pockets of providers in their accounts so they can take care of all of their needs within the next 2 months. That's what I've been led to believe, and I'm rooting for OCFS to keep that commitment.
In terms of how this money is going to be spent, it's my understanding that the state budget didn't include any plan for immediate direct relief to the child care workforce, a big disappointment for child care providers. Is that the case? And if so, is there still a chance to revisit that, or has all of the $2 billion plus dollars been allocated already?
No, it's a great question, but there is money in the prior allocations of federal stimulus that can be used to deal with employee and workforce issues. So, for example, we allocated $1.26, I believe, billion dollars for stabilization grants. Those stabilization grants are allowed to be used to help a workforce that has really taken the brunt of the trouble during the pandemic. So this is a workforce that's primarily comprised of women of color. And since we know that 1,500 childcare programs have closed, that is the group of individuals who have lost their jobs primarily in the childcare sector. So, yeah, there is money that's able to go out, and I believe it'll start getting into the hands of the providers, which should immediately be turned around for their workforce, because we really need to take care of their workforce because of the great job and the great work that they do, not only pre-pandemic, but during the pandemic, but also they have families themselves, and we need to be cognizant of that.
What's your sense of the state of the provider network in New York as we emerge from the pandemic? Does it seem like we lost, you know, a lot of providers over the last 15 months, or have they been able to hold it together with spit and gumption?
Well, the spit and gumption is great. So the answer is yes. Some of them have been able to hang on, but there weren't enough providers pre-pandemic.
Right.
Okay, so we had a problem before we went into it. Then a number of providers have closed. I mentioned the 1,500 child care programs have closed. And those that remain open are struggling because they're only able to accept fewer children. And part of that is because they can't find employees because of low wages. So we're sort of in a vicious cycle. But I believe when this money gets into the hands of providers, we'll be able to turn that around. And I believe that's in the next 2 months.
In early May, the Cuomo administration published the Child Care Availability Task Force report about 5 months after it was supposed to, but we'll move on from that. What are the most important recommendations in this report, which I think you may have seen at least like some version of a few months earlier? And of those big recommendations, what does the state seem to be already implementing, and what is something that you'd like to see them do in the future that was recommended by this task force?
So it's a great question. So let's start with the fact that the budget that we just passed, which included not only a huge influx of federal resources, but also we allocated consistent state resources to make the benefits we were able to put in the budget last in perpetuity. But this budget was great in tracking the Child Care Task Force recommendations. So we increased the number of slots by 10,000, and those are permanent slots, child care slots statewide. Mm-hmm. We also were able to reduce copays. We were able to take a bite out of the problem that providers are losing pay based off of absences. So all of the things that were really in the Child Care Task Force when it originally came out, we've been working on, primarily because we've been working with the advocate community who comprise the Child Care Task Force. I will also tell you that one of the victories we had at the end of the session was Assemblymember Clark and Senator Bruce Boyd's bill to extend the Child Care Task Force and make it a little bit more robust. But we have more work to do. There were a couple of bills at the end of this year, both of which I carry, that we were not able to get over the finish line that would allow collectively about 15,000 or more families in New York City to be eligible for child care. And also the second bill for parents that work part-time or nights or weekends to help their kids get full day care. So those bills have not passed. But in child care, we don't talk about losses. We talk about delayed success, so that the success on those two bills are delayed 6 months, which is frustrating, but we'll get them done as well.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with Assembly Children and Families Committee Chair Andrew Hevesy. In terms of making those bills into a success, like you just mentioned, delayed success, though, the first one that you mentioned would expand child care assistance eligibility to families making up to 85% of the state median income and add a few other qualifying conditions, and it would keep us in line with federal standards that are the maximum benefit allowed. What was the issue there? Because it did pass the Senate, but it didn't make it through the Assembly. Was this just a situation of time? Was it a situation
that's
of...
Exactly right.
That's what
right.
It is?
Yeah, and it was all timing, and nobody's more frustrated about it than I am, but I completely understand when time runs out. And let me get into this a little bit. So I wanted these bills to pass. They made it to the floor. The Republicans in the Assembly laid them aside, and I was prepared for debate. The clock ran out, which means that in the legislature, and you got to put yourself in the shoes of our speaker, Carl Heastie, who I think is a fantastic speaker and is responsible for most of the success, particularly in child care, but in other areas as well. But when you're running a legislature, you have to have a time where there's pencils down, where we're done legislating, because if you make exceptions, which is exactly what I asked the speaker to do on these two bills, but if you make an exception for one member, you have 106 other members who are going to want the same thing. So as frustrating as it was, sometimes we couldn't, sometimes somebody has to say no, and we couldn't get done under the wire. But we're definitely coming back on these. And the fact that they made it to the floor and they're ready to be passed and they already passed the Senate, it's a good sign for the future.
A bill that didn't get done in either house would require the Office of Children and Family Services to change the way it calculates the cost of child care, which likely would result in more accurate cost estimates, which likely would mean recognizing that child care is more expensive than the state currently acknowledges. Should this have gotten done, and why do you think neither house moved it?
That's a good question. So that bill by my colleague, Assemblywoman Sarah Clark, who, by the way, is fantastic in the child care space, they're right. So the market rate is what we're finding is not sufficient. What I'm suggesting is right now the subsidies are not sufficient to keep the providers in business.
Right.
What we needed to do is attach a market rate study to our current subsidy structure. We moved that bill out of the Assembly Children and Families Committee. It went to Ways and Means. And I'm sure we're going to have conversations about that, because if we are systemically, like my colleague Assemblywoman Clark and Senator Bruce Bort believe, and I do as well, if we are consistently underfunding our providers, we're really shooting ourselves in the foot. So I think that bill, while it didn't move this year in a surge of legislation at the last couple of weeks, which was thousands and thousands of bills, I think that bill will be priced to move at the beginning of the next session.
And just hearing you talk about the bills, I just want to pause for a second and point out to listeners that, and they probably noticed this, but we have lawmakers on the show a lot, and allegedly talking about issues in their wheelhouse, and they are not as well-versed on their bills or familiar with their co-sponsors or prime sponsors as you are right now. So I just wanted to say, like, it's really refreshing to hear you say this, and I wanted to say it on the air. What is that a product of? Is this, have you just like thrown yourself into this? Is it just come natural to you? Why is it?
Wow. That's a real compliment. I appreciate it. Look, I'm a committee chair of the Children and Families Committee post-pandemic, and the kids of New York who have been traumatized and suffering over the last year, and to be perfectly honest, even pre-pandemic, we're not being taken care of the way they should, deserve a chairman who is engaged and who knows the substance cold and is actively looking for opportunities to make their kids' lives better throughout New York State in a variety of ways. So, it's a matter of studying and working with my colleagues. But I got to tell you, I appreciate the compliment, but I am more excited about the number of colleagues in the legislature who are focused on these issues. Never in my, I've been here for 16 years now, have I seen a crew of newly elected assembly members and senators who are more aggressive and more in tune with their constituencies and also study the policy. It's really great to have that group to work with, and we're able to see some tangible results as a result.
And after a quick break, we'll have more with Assembly Children and Families Committee Chair Andrew Hevesy, a Queens Democrat.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're doing a deep dive into the state's child care policies and efforts to improve outcomes for children in New York more broadly. And our guest is Assembly Children and Families Committee Chair Andrew Hevesy, a Queens Democrat. So you mentioned the issue of childhood trauma, and that's something you've been working on a variety of fronts. Can you talk a little bit about some bills, one in particular, I think, that you'd want to talk about that made it through the legislature that could really have an effect on the experience and future outcomes of children in New York?
Absolutely. Thank you. So as you know, because we've talked before, I believe that adverse childhood experiences and childhood trauma are the public policy enemy number one. If you're looking at the long-term sustainability of our society, we can't keep feeding children who get traumatized away from school and away from a path that leads them to success into paths that will allow them to be what we call doomed or defined by their trauma. So this year, the bill that I had focused on the most, and I'm really proud to say that we passed the Assembly and the Senate, is a bill carried by Senator Bailey, who I am grateful for, is a bill that raises the age of from 7 to 12 of those kids who are allowed to be arrested and brought before the criminal justice system. So right now, under current law, if you are 7 years old, you're allowed to be handcuffed, put in a police car, interrogated, put into pre-trial detention with older kids, confined. And that is clearly re-traumatizing all of the kids who are winding up in the system. And what's really important to note, because this is all about ages, 90% of these kids, and remember, these are little kids, kindergarten through fifth grade, 90% of the kids who wind up or had wound up in the criminal justice system had ACEs. And many of them had some of the most severe ACEs before they were 5 years old. And as a result of those adverse childhood experiences, I believe that these kids have a structural problem with their prefrontal cortex that, remember, the prefrontal cortex is responsible for impulse control and emotional regulation. So now you have these traumatized kids who have problems with impulse control and emotional regulation, and they're more likely to get in trouble with law enforcement. And because they get involved with the system, many of them have their lives completely destroyed. They're more likely to become recidivist. They're more likely to wind up on public assistance and homeless. So you get the sense that we really need to change the way that we focus on particularly little kids, but all kids who are traumatized, and stop re-traumatizing them as a punishment for them just reacting to the structural deficiencies that was caused by trauma, which was no fault of their own.
Well, and this wasn't the only angle the legislature is taking in trying to improve outcome for children, because they also passed a bill that's going to require the state to codify goals for ending child poverty and tries to hold the Cuomo administration's feet to the fire if it deviates from this path in terms of its funding priorities to end childhood poverty. What kind of difference do you think this bill will make if it's signed into law? And do you think it will be a game changer? And if so, why should we share your optimism about just kind of setting a goal out there for combating childhood poverty?
So first, I'm exceptionally proud of the sponsors of the bill, Assemblyman Harry Bronson and also Senator Jessica Ramos.
There you are with those bill sponsor names again.
Yeah, well, these are my friends, and they're working in the same space that I am, which is to make the lives of the children in New York better. And by putting New York on this path, first they create a task force, and then they create a standard by which we must adhere to try to pull these kids out of poverty. I think it's a great win for kids, and I'm really proud of those two sponsors for pushing that bill over the edge, and I hope the governor signs it.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're doing a deep dive into state policies and spending aimed at helping New York children. And our guest is Assembly Children and Families Committee Chair Andrew Hevesy, a Queens Democrat. And finally, leading up to the budget, it seemed like you were taking the approach with the Cuomo administration, and it sounds like you are now with your compliments for OCFS, that you can catch more flies, you know, with honey than vinegar, as your tone and your public remarks have been very focused on collaboration as opposed to maybe a combative nature. Am I reading the approach that you're taking right? And if so, how do you think it's working? And do you anticipate that being your approach for the foreseeable future?
So the answer is yes. That has been my approach. I can't promise that's going to stay my approach because it's situational, right? We'll see if OCFS is not able to deliver within the next 2 months what they're promising to deliver, my attitude will change. But the truth is, we have seen just in this last year some remarkable success in the childcare space and others by working with the Cuomo administration. And I have had the luxury of working with OCFS. I speak to Commissioner Poole at least once a month, sometimes many more. And I now understand their operations. And they are really, really good and really trying to do the best they can with the resources they have on hand. Now, you're right. I did have a history of being combative with the governor. But I changed tone this year when I saw the opportunity for us to work together, and we did. And the success in the budget, once that money gets out the door, which, again, we're urging the governor and OCFS to get that money out the door. But once that hits, it's a game changer. So, yes, my default setting will be I would like to get along cooperatively, but, again, it's situational. If the situation continues, particularly with our child care providers, who once again, they've had zero impact from all the money and policies we did in the budget, if that continues, my tone will change.
Do you think, based on all you've invested into this area of policy, that whenever the next game of committee leadership musical chairs happens, whether it's, you know, the next round of primaries or after the next elections, you'd want to stay with children and families, or would you want to pass it along to someone else?
I'm not going anywhere with children and families. I've honestly been looking forward to potentially chairing this committee. I got that luxury from the speaker earlier this year, but I don't want to go anywhere, and I'll tell you why. I truly believe, and I've been in this business for a while, 16 years now, but I've come to believe that adverse childhood experience and childhood trauma is the game. It's the long-term societal game. If you get a handle on it, you can win, and you can have your society replete with success and kids who are going on to do great things. If you fail at this, you're going to have generations of kids who are doomed or defined by their trauma, and the societal consequences of that include the worst things, include homelessness and people on public assistance forever, and the recidivism and failure out of school and rising rates of alcohol and substance abuse. So I have come to believe that childhood trauma is the entire game, and I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay with this committee until I make a real bet.
In combating that problem that we're talking about, do you think the state is limited to what it can accomplish based on what the federal government is willing to invest in this as well? Or is this a situation where the state can go it alone?
It's a little bit of both. It's a great question. So, for example, there's money coming from the federal government from the Families First Prevention Act, the Title IV-E money that helps fund programs that prevent kids from coming into foster care. That money will be, and I use this as an example because this is the federal government can help. But by the same token, the federal government also put restrictions on that money. So there's some things we can't do, and the state has to step up. So I think the state could go it alone, but there's some federal resources we need to use and capitalize off of. But I believe we're going to need a big push of state money next year to infuse into the child care sector and also preventative services for kids. So the state needs to get more into the game, but we need to leverage the federal funds that are coming.
Well, we've been speaking with Assembly Children and Families Committee Chair Andrew Hevesy. He is a Queens Democrat. Assembly member, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. You have a great day. Thanks.
And for more on the evolving issue of childcare in New York, check out our conversation from this spring with industry advocates who provided a full breakdown of the state's plan to spend $2.4 billion in federal childcare money and also explained how the federal childcare tax credits are becoming much more generous. That interview, like all the past conversations from our audio vault, can be found at wcny.org/thecapitolpressroom or wherever you download podcasts.
Support for the Capitol Pressroom is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.